Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by fellow monk Scott, who is several months into a year-long stay at the monastery and is here with us this afternoon to speak about his experiences with that. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Jen. Hi.
Hey. So it's kind of the Olympics of practice, would you say?
It is. Yes.
A unique opportunity, unlike, you know, many others. And I, you know, for you, and actually really for anyone who's coming to stay for as long as you've committed to stay, you're not new to practice. You know, you have quite a bit of practice under your belt. And I wonder if you might just speak to what some of the particular highlights of practicing at the monastery have been in your time here so far.
Yeah, that would be great. It was so much fun to even just sort of be asked to do this, because my attention, of course, went to all these amazing things that are going on in my training, all the opportunities here at the monastery.
Yeah, it's such a gift, isn't it, to be asked a question like that, to really reflect. Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, what's funny, if you talk about it as the Olympics, one of the huge gifts occurred before even stepping on the property. And that was the preparation, the process to come to the monastery. And just like everything we do at the monastery, there is just complete support to do that. And so, you know, if you make a commitment to leave your life, there's a lot of things you need to take care of. You know, there's relationships and family and finances and health. You know, if you own a home, your job, all kinds of things. And what I loved about that was I just realized how little I'd had conscious compassion and awareness, kind of that light be shown on these really important areas of my life. And I, over about 3 or 4 months of my preparation, I got to take a look from that lens. And so this huge expansion occurred before I even arrived.
You know what? It's so funny. It's just exactly like a macro version of the micro thing you described today. So in being asked to speak about your experience, it had you really look at your experience, and it sounds like the process of preparing to come to the monastery had you looking at your entire life in that way.
Exactly. Yeah. With that conscious compassion and awareness, just a giant spotlight. So that was super fun. And then, you know, one of the things I've always loved about training at the monastery, and I'm sure other folks who've come and done working meditation can relate, which is to be trained on how to do something from in a way that's clear and patient and kind and, you know, encouraging without, it's not, there's no ego, you know. And so, you know, learning how to do a recipe or cook granola or, you know, build a fire, really any kind of training here is awesome. And if you enjoy that, basically have endless opportunities to participate in that kind of process.
Yeah, and it's so, I was going to say, it's so opposite from how it generally is kind of in one's day-to-day life. It doesn't have to be, but it tends to be in when we're all in our conditioning and, you know, everyone around us is in conditioning, that there's kind of this I'm supposed to already know everything kind of paradigm.
Right.
And that we can't really show, you know, it's too vulnerable to learn something. You know, we're supposed to be perfect right out of the gate or that sort of thing. But it's true, monastic practice really is an invitation to even learn something that I, quote, already know. You know, maybe someone comes to the monastery to train who is a chef, you know, or cook a ton in their own life. But it's such a chance to just bring, as we say in Zen, beginner's mind to all of it and to just open oneself, kind of surrender oneself to that training process is a real joy.
It is a real joy. And I think what I've learned, which is I suspect everyone here already knew that about me, but that I'm built for learning. You know, so you really just get to completely see the adequacy of the human, which, you know, just melt away all those stories about I can't, you know, through the experience.
Right, because the I can't is coming through the filtered story. Because, I mean, if you picture, there we are, we're trying to learn something, and all that conversation that's being thrown at us, what, you're not getting this, here's what they think, da-da-da-da-da, and the invitation here is to just be here and learn, and then we actually find out, oh, we can.
We can, and there's just a real kind of emphasis and priority on that. We even have you know, the folks who live here get to participate in a creative day. So mine has to be around a creative project around recording and listening, and really encouraged to take the space and time to participate in things that light you up. So, you know, there's lots of work to be done here, and we never want to lose track, and I feel like it's said to us over and over again that we're here to wake up and end suffering. That's where we want our attention.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is unbelievably extraordinary. I mean, I can't use enough superlatives in there, that there is a place that exists for that. That, yes, we put food on the table, and we build fires to keep ourselves warm, and we, you know, do all those things. But as you say, it's all in service to waking up, and that is the only reason for all of it. And I don't know of another place on earth where that's the case. And the generosity and the, you know, the good fortune of those of us who find ourselves here, the generosity of this being offered to us, you know, from the guide, from the monastery, from the whole Sangha, really, because we could say the Sangha is supporting this place to be here for people who want to do this.
That's right.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It truly is. It's a huge gift. And, you know, this other area that I think is kind of interesting that may be a little bit different than shorter-term stays, and I think I've heard Sherry talk about this in her training, where she went to her monastery, and I think she said, you know, in the first month and a half, it was like nirvana. And then all her rejections started to take hold. You know, like that person became her mom, and that person became her brother. And that's kind of been my experience, that those things start to take hold. And what an amazing opportunity, just along the lines you were saying as the gift, to look at those and work with those in such a safe, supportive, kind accountability kind of environment. You know, like things that have kind of held me in relationships kind of in bondage for a long time are starting to unravel and come apart.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. And that's my experience, too, is that it goes from, oh, I can't believe it. You know, I hate when this happens. And now this is going to happen here at the monastery, too. Like, I came here to get away from this stuff, you know. And it can be. There can be a period of time of feeling like, well, this is just a big mistake. It's just like everywhere else. But then to get to the place that you're talking about of, oh, thank gosh, this is coming up because I want to train with this. And what an extraordinarily compassionate place to do that.
Yes, what an extraordinary compassionate place to do that. And then, you know, I project in that process of compassion, you know, we're becoming compassion. And, you know, I think for me, the longer-term stay, you know, it's so great to go on retreats and, you know, we have those insights come in and get these glimpses of what we are, you know. And, but then, you know, then we leave. And then at least for me, I'd kind of go back into those old patterns. Well, it seems like the longer you stay, you get to start to settle into that wasn't just an experience of awareness or just an insight. I am that. I am that awareness. I am that insight. And the defense of the commitment to staying allows to let go of the defensive system just long enough to really start to get a good sense of what you truly are.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautifully described. Yeah. And, you know, as you say that, I think, you know, I feel like the old stories, you know, the old person telling stories. But, you know, when I first started training at the monastery, there weren't all the amazing practice opportunities that there are right now. So as you're talking about that, what I'm seeing is one thing that's amazing about practice right now with technology where it is and all of that, that people actually have a shot at living in practice, even if they're not at the monastery. It doesn't take the place of, I think there is something unique to doing a stay at the monastery that really provides something that it's a different, it's a more intense, like all the time, you know, 24 hours a day kind of, I think.
Yeah, it is that kind of, I've heard Sherry say, if you want to learn a language, you know, immerse yourself in the language, and that's what this is, you know, really immersing yourself in practice. And you're right, with all the opportunities, we can kind of do that wherever you live, and this is a unique experience. And you know, the only thing I wanted to add for folks, if you have a sense that there's something kind of shifting and moving around, and you hear a little spark, to really pursue that in terms of, you know, having a long-term stay at the monastery, and you know, even if the voices are saying things like, you know, well, what are, you can't do that. What about this, or what about this person, or that job, or that kind of thing. if you're really being called to explore, and that could, you know, if you get on with a mentor or use an RLB call to look at it, or if you have a coach. And, you know, if you get really kind of, oh, this seems really kind of serious, you can always write into the registration office to Guestmaster and just say, you know, this keeps coming up. And I think for me what happened was all those things that seemed like barriers, there were all kinds of amazing things that took care of those in ways that I could not see from the place I was standing. Everything just kept opening up. It was really amazing, the whole process.
Well, and that's what I was really hearing in it, too. It's just the process of it. So as you say, you know, so if someone has kind of just that something happening in their gut, like, gosh, I'd really like to look into that. Oh, no, but you can. To just be open to it and not entertain the stories of what that means or how this can't or that, but just walk those steps. And as you said, to write into the registration office. And, you know, we're really committed that people have the opportunity to take advantage of that, of a stay at the monastery if they choose to do it, and that we have ways to support people no matter where they are in their practice. Because, you know, it wouldn't be kind for someone who's brand new, never been on a retreat, oh, sure, come on ahead for a year at the monastery. You know, that's not going to be kind for anyone. But that wherever someone is, there are ways to support them towards that process. And since it's not the content but the process, just being in that process is what's going to lead us towards freedom.
Yes, the process of support leads us to that freedom.
Well, Scott, believe it or not, it's just about 5 o'clock. That went fast. Anything else you wanted to add before we end?
No, I think it's all right there. I mean, I could go on for another 20 minutes, but thank you for the opportunity to share and to look at those things for myself. And again, just to encourage folks to explore that possibility for themselves.
Yeah, thank you. And to me, it's just another illustration of how every person's practice is a gift to the entire Sangha, truly.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jen.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Scott. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I love that last line, that every person's practice is a gift to the entire Sangha.
Yes, and I would expand that. I would say to the entire world.
Wow.
I think so. Yes. In fact, I'm pretty darn sure about it. You know, I sound modest when I say, well, I think that's the key. But then, actually, the fact of the matter is, I know it's true.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the voices always want to say what we're doing is selfish and indulgent and all of that. And it's not. Not when we're practicing. It's a gift to everyone and everything, and the only indulgence, of course, is listening to egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate as it tries to make a person's life small and karma bogged down with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Kindness.
How are you doing, Michael?
I'm great. Great. Glad to be here. Glad to be practicing, grateful for life and practice and all of it.
Good. Okay, I didn't want to miss the moment to find out how, you know, sometimes we get talking about things and then I forget to find out how you are.
Thank you. And how are you?
Really, really, really well. Really well.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Having a very exciting, lit up, expansive practice time.
Wonderful.
You know how fun those are?
Yes.
You know, and I don't mean just everything is going exactly the way I would want it to. I'm not talking about one of those. I'm talking about where you get to see something you haven't seen before, or you get to see something you might have seen before, but you see it from a completely different perspective, and you know.
Yeah.
That this is training, this is practice, this is breaking ground, this is going to new places. One of those. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Lovely. Mm-hmm.
And I have some announcements here.
All right. What's going on?
Well, the schedule preview is now up on the web.
Anything
yes.
good?
Yes. Fill out your calendar of support for 2015 using the preview schedule of retreats and offerings at livingcompassion.org/schedule-preview. Again, that's livingcompassion.org/schedule-preview. And a link can also be found in the What's New section at livingcompassion.org.
All right. For people who like to just click rather than type in all those dots and forward slashes. I'm one of those people. Yeah, I like that. I like that click option.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've looked at the schedule and it's fabulous. It's great.
Good. Good.
And the time has come to connect. Reflective Listening Buddies will start a new quarter in January, have a weekly call, and explore practice while offering support to another Sangha member.
Mm-hmm. Scott just mentioned that, how you can use that, that's one of the tools you can use effectively for looking at any big issue that's up in your life, like coming to the monastery for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. And visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all our events.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of reminders to make gas show. To indicate your desire to talk with Sherry, press star 6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Right. So, Michael, do you hear a lot of static?
I hear a little bit.
Okay. Kind of buzzy, staticky, but it's not bad.
A little bit buzzy, yeah.
Okay.
Let's see if it goes away when we get this caller on the air.
All right, great. Thank you, Michael.
Yep. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi.
Hi. Who's this?
Hi, this is Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm surprised I'm first.
Just lucky tonight.
Yeah. So, I'm going through a very challenging time, and I wanted to ask, I noticed in the patterns that are coming up for me over and over again, there's, I noticed like when I strip it down, there's a sense of shame underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So like for a long time, I used to do a lot of compulsive eating. And it feels like, for a long time, I felt like I've been, like, running away. You know, like there's something I'm running away from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so lately I noticed, like, there's this shame. Like, some kind of shame thing gets triggered, and then, you know, I get into the food thing again, or...
So, also, Nancy, can I ask you? Can I ask you? So it feels like there's the shame...
Yeah.
And there's the food thing, then there's the shame. Is there kind of a cycle with that? In other words, does the shame come up about the eating, and then time passes, and then there's shame about something, and then the eating, and then there's shame about the eating, and then time passes? Is it that kind of progression?
Yeah, definitely there's a cycle. And lately one thing I've noticed is this extreme discomfort around people and just like really wanting to avoid people. Like there's a sense of like there's something that will be found out about me, like something terrible about me that will be that people will see, you know. So there's a sense of like wanting to hide from people, and I feel so phony around people and like really sensitive to criticism, and underneath that I sense this like shame. So that was my question, like what is that about?
Yeah, what the heck is that? Well, this is
because it really feels like I'm running and I'm doing all these things lately to just distract myself.
Yep.
Now, panicking.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, if we were in a room, say we're at the, you know, the New Year's retreat, and there are about 60 of us there, and you said that, I would say, okay, Nancy, let's just get a reality check. And I would say, how many of you know what she's talking about? And every person in the room would raise their hand. Okay? The content might be slightly different. Okay? Mm-hmm. It might not be food for everybody. It might not be panic. It might not. But that experience is the human condition. And so as impossible as it seems to believe, when we, you know, when until we've worked with it for a while, mm-hmm. what's going on there is ego is controlling you. So what egocentric karmic conditioning self hate, it lives, it appears to live from our attention. Like, I don't know how long you've been around practice or how much of this is going to be familiar. So I'll just say it as if you've never heard any of this before, okay? Mm-hmm. So it has to have your constant attention to continue to be viable, to appear to exist. When you're not attending to it, now you are every person, right? Every person has the same process going on. When we're not attending to ego, it doesn't exist. And we all know that. You know, you get distracted by something, you forget all about your problems, all about these issues, whatever, they don't exist. Then as soon as there's a little gap, it roars back in with whatever its deal is, and you go back to giving all of your attention to that world that it's creating.
Yeah, and
are you with me so far?
Yeah. Can I mention something real quick?
Please do.
Okay. So it's like two things that tie in with that whole pattern are like I notice I have this ability to sabotage myself.
Yeah. Nancy, I got to stop you. Okay. I'll let you continue in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
It has the ability to talk you into doing things that are bad for you.
Right, and I don't realize it till like immediately after.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yep. Again, everybody in the room would hold up their hand. Okay? So you're really describing every person's experience, okay? So
right. Uh-huh. So that being said, like that sort of undermines my confidence in myself, like because I've sabotaged myself so much, like gosh, I don't trust myself. It feels like this monster inside me. And so now people get frustrated with me because they say, like, you're uncommitted, like you're hesitant to commit. People notice that about me. And
of
then
course.
Again, like I feel like it's all jumbled.
Right. Okay. So here's the deal. Here's the question. And you know, this is the question for now and for later.
Okay.
Are you ready to address this?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Then what you're looking at is practice. So, and now I'm here to say that practice is fun and exciting. It's the biggest adventure a human being can go on, okay? But ego does not want it to happen because you will give it attention when you are miserable and suffering. So
right.
It keeps you in that conversation, in that cycle, so that you'll stay away from people, you'll isolate, you'll go home, you'll be alone with it. It can talk you into behaviors that make you feel bad about yourself and make you not trust yourself. Okay,
yes.
So all of that is true. So it is, you know, we have this expression. It's a haiku, a Zen haiku, and it's climb Mount Fuji, oh snail, but slowly, slowly. Okay? And we love it, of course, because it's a perfect image of practice. Ego wants to say, well, then just get over this, because, of course, that won't work and you can't do it. But it's a practice. And so here you are. We're talking. We're having the conversation. As you go along, you're going to get clearer and clearer about what ego is and how it works, how it does what it does. And as you get clearer, you'll disidentify from it. You'll step back from it. You'll see it. You'll see how it does to everybody, what it does to you. Slightly different content, variations on the theme, but basically the same thing. And you will increasingly become stronger, more able to go up against it. And it will lose ground and power, and you will gain ground and power. And one day, this will be behind you. Now, when it's behind you, you'll have new things to practice with. But it won't be this. So my encouragement, have you ever read There's Nothing Wrong With You?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. That's a good one, isn't it?
It is. Thank you.
and you listen to the radio show, obviously, because here you are calling in. Okay, where do you live, may I ask?
Right now I'm in D.C.
In D.C.?
Virginia.
Okay. Yeah, okay, good. So that's going to be tricky to get to us anytime soon. But if you want to, you know, you'll look at that schedule that Michael just announced. You'll find a way to get to a workshop. See if there's a sitting group anywhere near you, and just start practicing. Okay? I would encourage you to. Do you have a recording and listening practice?
I don't.
Okay. Well, you need to. That'll be a good project for you. That'll be a good thing to start at the end of this year. And so with that, you can. You know the books that go with it that teach you. There's a website, and get that recorder, get your relationship with the mentor going so that you have support, and just know you're climbing Mount Fuji, and you're going to do it one step at a time, and it's worth it. And the more accustomed to the training you get, the more fun you're going to have. You're going to like it.
Okay.
All right. Sangha, stay close.
Okay. Well, the shame makes it hard, but I will.
The what?
I said the shame makes it hard to stay close, but I'll try.
Okay. All right. Thank you for saying that, because let's touch on that before we say goodnight, okay? The shame, well, you know, the terms that I can use in these circumstances, it's bull hockey. It's horse pucky. There's nothing to it. There's a word for it. It's a mirage. Okay, it's not true. So here's what I want you to do, and the other thing you could do is get a coach. Okay, that's fabulous support for the kind of work that you're doing.
Okay.
So here's what you do. Okay, are you pretty familiar with the shame feeling?
Yeah. And myself,
can you tell me where it is in your body?
I get nauseous. Like, I want to vomit, basically.
Okay, so it's right around your stomach, third chakra, solar plexus, that area?
I mean, I just get this feeling of, like, wanting to vomit.
Okay.
I guess it must be in my gut somewhere.
Okay. All right. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to sit down the next time you have that, and every time until you accomplish what I'm getting ready to encourage you to accomplish. Every time it happens, you stop and you turn all of your attention to that feeling. And here's the question. What do these sensations have to do with shame? What do these sensations have to do with shame? And, of course, we both know the answer right now, don't we? The answer is nothing, okay? But you have to prove that to yourself. So right now, there's a connection. You feel that feeling. The conversation says, that's shame. Now you feel ashamed because you've been told that you're having a feeling that means you should feel ashamed, and so you feel ashamed.
And run away, yeah.
That's right. But none of it has any validity at all. It's completely bogus. Okay? It's as if, you know, you're my child, and I slap you alongside the head periodically and say, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself. Okay? pretty soon you can feel that slap, even though it's not there. And what it means is you should feel ashamed of yourself. And so you feel that feeling in the side of your head. You probably, when you're an adult, you probably have headaches, right? But you have that sensation on the side of your head, and you feel ashamed. Now you're 30 years old. You have no idea how those two got connected, right? Yeah, it's exactly like that. Okay?
So just stick with the body feel sensation.
That's right. Stick with the sensations and just hold that question for yourself. What does this feeling have to do with being ashamed?
Okay.
All right. And then you're going to stay in touch with me and keep me posted, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Because, you know, that's what Sangha is. We're in this together now. We do this together.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I really appreciate your enthusiasm.
I have endless amounts because you know why? I love practice, and the reason I love it so much is I know it works. It ends suffering. That's a good thing.
Yay.
All right, take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael, it's Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel, how are you?
Oh, I'm great, as always.
As always, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no matter what's going on, you're great as always. That's good.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I used to date someone, and he was always great, and I used to get mad at him because I didn't believe him. And it's so fun to be at
be that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then to see, I guess it was true. I mean, tons of stuff were going on, but that didn't mean he wasn't great, and that doesn't mean I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been filling out the sex and before I say that, I want to say that I love when people that are new to practice call in. So whoever's listening that is afraid of calling in, please call in because it's the best. I just love the feeling I get.
Yes, me too.
Anyway, so I've been filling out the Sex and Money Are Dirty, Aren't They? Book.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I've been looking at money a lot because it's something that I kind of left for a second in my life. I wasn't really paying much attention to money. I was just paying attention to spirituality and processing and psychotherapy and just all that stuff. And now it's knocking on my door and it's showing up as all these symptoms, financial symptoms of, you know, not having money and needing to have money and pressure and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like I'm a newborn with money because I've never really had to look at it as much as I do now.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I'm just, I don't know if you can give me like a general context of your experience with the whole thing. I don't know if you did the same thing I did with leaving things, money matters for later in life, but maybe that's something a lot of us do, but I feel so, filling out the book helps me. It helps me see a lot of the unconsciousness around it, the little thought that has gone into it, the autopilot nature of in which money has been sort of like coming in and out of my life because I haven't really been paying attention to it.
And
I'm looking to really sort of get that skill.
Yes. Well, I don't know if this is true in other countries. I don't know. I know in this country, we are somewhat famous for magical thinking, that something is going to happen and I'm going to be rich. You know,
yes,
I had
that. Yep.
Yeah, not even I'm going to be all right, but I'm going to be rich, which, of course, is why the lottery is so popular. mm-hmm. right? Because people really deeply believe that. Well, the reality is for almost everybody, nothing happens, and nobody gets rich. I've been looking at that a lot lately, because without going into it, as you know, there are a group of us who are doing this this business thing as a way mm-hmm. of exploring money karma. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing with it is, okay, so stop right there and go back. In, I don't know which book it is, but one of them. I don't want to. I don't feel like it. I think we talk about how the process, so I want to lose weight. And so if I said that to somebody and I said, you know, I do this process of wanting to lose weight, and people would go, oh, yeah, well, I know that process. And I believe that that's what I'm doing because that's what I'm focused on. I want to lose weight. I try to lose weight. I go on diets. I go to all of these different things. I've invested a ton of money in because I really want to lose weight. But the actual process, the karmic process that I'm engaged in is I want to lose weight, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the actual identity,
mm-hmm.
okay, which is huge to get. Because as long as that's the identity, it doesn't matter what I want. It's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the ego, having that as the identity of maintenance, the maintenance identity, is never going to let me be successful in losing weight because that would spell the end of ego's grip on me. Okay? So the same thing is true with money, where people want to have something. So, again, back up. You know the expression, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different outcome?
Yep.
Yep. That's
Einstein.
The same. Huh?
They attribute that to Einstein.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Good. Well, that would be right, huh? And so that is a perfect description of karma. So karma would have a say, I want this in my life to be different, but I'm going to approach having it be different the way I've always approached having it be different, because having it the way I've always had it is far more important to me than having it be different.
Mm-hmm.
The wanting it to be different is simply to hold in place the other side of that, which is, and it can't be different for me, and it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've seen. That's what I've seen so far. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen this with this and many other processes. Yeah. Well, all of them, because I know the reason why I'm using the word money and saying the word money is because there's resistance to doing that, but I realize that how you do anything is how you do everything. But I think with the money thing in specific for me, because I have it so far away from spirituality, or conditioning has it so far away from spirituality, and I see that I've been trying, like this trying to become conscious of money and get money has been going on for a while, and I've been trying it over and over and over again the same way. So it's happening in that insane way, according to that definition, or in that insane way, period.
Which is why the sex and money book, why those two are put together, right? They're two of the most, how would we describe our relationship with them? I mean, most human beings are vitally concerned with both of those. Money being the, you know, the holding place for having everything you want and need in life, right? So those two things are held by karmic conditioning as polar opposites to spirituality.
Yeah, the thing is it's not my my direct experience that money is everything. So I think that's why,
all I mean by that is you can then eat. You can have a roof over your head. You can get from place to place. You can take care of yourself. You can, you know, without money, and that's just the placeholder for that, all of those other things are very iffy for you.
Okay. So how do I, so this illusion of magical thinking that something big's going to happen, et cetera, that's pretty intact and very protected by conditioning. How would I?
Because it won't work.
Oh, I love that.
That's the thing I want people to get. It's only held there because it's not going to work.
I love that.
So, you know, one of those things as Buddhists say is that what happens with karma is, so I'm going along and I want this, 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 and this. Okay, and that's my karma. I want this, 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 and this. I want a wonderful relationship and loving children and a nice house, and that's my dream. Okay, and mm-hmm. it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. So guess what? I need to come back and try again.
It's a perfect setup for its continued success. Yeah.
Precisely.
I don't know if you've heard about some people believe in these conspiracies about the Illuminati being people out there that are plotting everything, and I'm seeing the Illuminati happening much closer than that.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah. What is
the
this
conspiracy,
out there?
Yeah, the conspiracy is going on within, yeah.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right, well, karma... You know, karma is a force, right?
Yeah.
It's an orientation. You know, people talk about it as means, right? And they are, my grandson talks about it as, you know, they're just trying to make a living. They're just trying to stay alive. And
mm-hmm.
so there they are as thought patterns, as emotional reactions, as whatever it is. They're not evil, but they are attempting to continue. And so
mm-hmm.
the thought patterns are there until we do something rather extreme to bring them to a halt. They're going to continue on because it's their survival. That's how karma operates.
And it looks like the closer you get to putting it out of business or starving it to death, the more skillful they get at concealing the whole thing and getting closer to things that are more existential and scary and all that kind of stuff.
That's exactly right. And fear is the way they protect themselves, right? Just like any, you know, get close to a skunk, and what does it do? When it gets afraid, boom, you get a big old jolt of stinky. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And ego is the same way. You get close to it, you start threatening it, and it goes into evasive maneuvers and pulls out all of the things that, you know, okay, I'm scared. I'm not going to do that anymore. All right, I'll just go back to magical thinking.
Mm-hmm. But I'm getting a sense now that the fear that's being triggered by it is more like going down this fun slide. Like, okay, I'll find it. Because there's really no real threat. You know, with a skunk spewing that thing, it could maybe physically attack you. I don't know what skunks do beyond that, but I know ego can't do anything to me.
That's exactly right. Except
so
what it talks us into doing to ourselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, say that again.
Exactly right. It can only talk us into doing things to ourselves. That's
right.
That's what Nancy was talking about, right? That it talks people into doing things that are harmful to them.
Wow, this
that's
really
all it has.
Yeah, doesn't
that's
this make everything? That's all it has, right? I was going to say, doesn't this make everything so much easier?
Oh yeah, understanding this, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the extreme version of it is that when ego gets really deeply, deeply threatened, it starts talking to people about, why don't you just kill yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the point of it is that doing the same thing over and over, hoping for a different result, is not going to work. Therefore, what we need to do is different things until we find the thing that does work.
Yeah, and I think personally, I can't speak for everybody. I have a sense that maybe everybody that we do know what works, and you know,
yes.
the resistance makes us or makes me think that I don't or that I can't or all that. But it's all a big lie. I do know what works.
Yes, and we know what we have to face down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just we just have to do it.
We just have to do it.
All right, Sherry.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Gabriel.
Thanks. That was exciting. Thank you.
Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. That was a fun conversation, Sherry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be, I was just talking about that today, that's going to be a huge thing for me for this year, is that realizing at a deeper and deeper level that making those kinds of karmic choices and not realizing that making those karmic choices is keeping me in the place that I say I don't want to be in, that we're going to be talking a lot about that this year.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, Michael and Sherry. This is Claire.
Well, hello, Claire. How are you?
Hi. Well, thank you. Yeah,
good.
I want to,
what's going on?
I want to check something out with you in that, I'm very familiar with some karma that this being has around, you know, working hard and as a means of kind of destruction in a way, and working hard to for conditioning for satisfaction that never happens.
Yes.
So I've been.
So let me, Claire. Let me see if I'm with you. So I have a belief system, we could say a karmic belief system, that if I work really hard, and that is undefined, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I work really hard, then I will be rewarded by having the things, the life, the experience that I want to have.
Correct.
That's it? Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
All right, go ahead.
So, the voices lately have been telling me a lot that, you know, I'm not doing the right thing. I should be doing something else. And so I've been listening to recordings around just coming back to the moment and trusting that I'm doing the right thing.
Uh-huh.
And being here.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of, and then there's anxiety, though, around, you know, am I really doing the right thing? And then what drops in is to maybe have some kind of to-do list or something, some kind of system that lists exactly all the things I should be doing. But I want to check in whether this is, I'm not sure whether this is just, ego trying to get me back on the path of do, or if some yes. kind of a...
Yes, I can confirm that for you. That's exactly what's going on. mm-hmm. Yeah, so here's the thing. You know, whether you take the kind of view that we have, people who, you know, do a spiritual practice or awareness practice or that, psychology, psychotherapy, you know, any kind of thing where people look at what life is all about, mm-hmm. there's nobody who's going to say what life is all about is having the longest to-do list and getting more things checked off of it than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Nobody's going to say that. Except ego. Because mm-hmm. the reason ego says it is exactly what you're describing. It keeps you off balance. Keeps you, you know, not really trusting yourself. Keeps you not enjoying your life. Keeps your attention on it.
And keeps my attention on all those things that I have to do, all those things I haven't done. And
on anxiety.
Oh, yes, on anxiety.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we were going to say, well, what do you think is the kind of the purpose of life? What do you think is most important?
To enjoy being here,
uh-huh.
and to be a being of, you know, compassion and kindness.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you. Mm-hmm. And what is the thing that keeps you from that?
Having all these things to do and being told that I have to do all these things first before anything else happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. And so when back in the day when I was in the monastery, and you know, I knew I would be fine if I could ever not be afraid of my teacher. Finally getting to the point where I've told this story many, many times, but he's huffing and puffing up the hill toward me, and his veins are sticking out on his head, and he's all bright red, and I think, oh, I am so in for it. I am so in for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just
mm-hmm.
dropped in, you know, what I'm here for is to learn to be peaceful no matter what.
Right.
That's what I'm here for. Yeah.
Right.
So if he yells at me, he yells at me. But my job is to be peaceful no matter what.
Right. And the anxiety that I feel around, you know, from ego, karmic
mm-hmm.
conditioning, self-made around, am I doing the right thing? That's just
mm-hmm.
something to be breathed into. And I do find it helpful to, like, just, like, move the body when I feel that rather
yes.
than push to the computer and do stuff.
That's right. Because that energy is your life force. It's your life force. Right? I mean, and you're filled with energy. So when you move and you do something with conscious awareness, anything, you could go for a run, you could dance, you could clean the house. It doesn't matter. As long as you're doing it with conscious awareness, then you're giving that energy to the human being instead of to conditioning.
Great. This has been so helpful. So it seems to me, the practice is for me to continue listening to those recordings around, you know, trusting that life drops in, what is important to pay attention to in the moment, and to do those things and enjoy doing those things.
That's right. And on the last, when you draw your last breath, you want that to be a breath of compassion and kindness. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the final goal, and you want to be practicing every moment up until then, so that that last breath is a doozy. Yeah?
Excellent.
So you just go out with a big smile on your face.
Great. Excellent. Thank you so much. This has been great.
You're so welcome. Talk to you soon.
Thank
Good
you.
Night.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Claire. That was fun, Sherry.
Yes, we have a fun sangha.
Yes, we do. Yes,
mm-hmm.
we do. I think that's what attracts everybody to it.
Right. That's what attracts us to us.
Yes. Yes. And I have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Who's this?
This is Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Good. What's going on?
I jumped in like 15 minutes ago, and you were talking about ego being deeply threatened, and I'd say that that's where I'm at right now.
Uh-huh.
And basically, I have a very highly intellectual ego. I've read so much stuff. I've had a number of, like, spiritual experiences, but I just have difficulty getting past, like, just analyzing everything. And what's kind of been irking me that I just cannot seem to get past, it's like I'm just stuck in the mud, and it's been like this for a few months, is I made a life decision out of ego. And looking from an outside perspective, whether it was a good or bad choice, I'm not so much concerned with that. It's just that it would be a lot easier for me just to go through with this life decision, like just to go this direction with my life. But there's like this hidden resistance to it that I just can't seem to wrap my mind around. And every time I go down this road, it just seems like there's stress that I can't seem to make conscious. It's like this weird way that I'm just staying stuck, and I'm finding it really difficult to wrap my awareness around that.
Okay, tell me why you need to wrap your awareness around it?
Because every time, it's just like when I live this out, it's basically a career choice that I've been going back and forth on, but when I, the few times that I really commit to it, it's like, I'm not sure if I'll ever really get over the stress around it. It just seems like...
Okay, let me ask you this. So
yeah.
you're trying out this thing,
yes.
Right? Do you like it?
I don't like it, but I know that there's just resistance to it. Like, I know, like, on one level I like it, but I seem to be so focused on me not liking it that it just gets in the way.
Well, if you don't like it, why are you doing it?
I'm doing it because I don't know if I really like anything at the moment.
Okay. All right. At the moment or in your life? Have you ever liked anything?
Yes, of course. And that's kind of what is the resistance. I'm saying that, like, there's a lot of emotions and whatever that I never chose to look at that all kind of come up around this issue.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I feel like I would like it if I was just cleared emotionally, but I'm not. So
tell me about the emotions.
Tell you about them?
Yeah. What are the emotions that come up?
Honestly, what comes up is just pain, really. I feel a lot of like inner tension. And it's, for me, I see it as when I'm not going down this road, that inner tension is kind of repressed. And that's
Okay. Well, this is good then, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
This is good.
Yeah.
So you're getting to see it.
Yes.
Okay. And so you're an awareness practice kind of guy. So that's good, right? Yeah. So you want to see this. You don't want it repressed, and you don't want it to hold you back.
Exactly.
You want to see it and let and allow it to come up to the surface and let it go so you're free to do whatever you want to do.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Exactly.
All right. And so here's a suggestion just to see what happens, okay? What if you committed to this for a year?
That's a very good suggestion. I don't know. I don't know what would happen, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It would,
because if it's vague and amorphous and it's like, I'm going to commit to this and it's the old view of marriage, you know, I'm going to get married and then until death do us part, you know, that could give a person pause.
Right.
But if it, you know, there's all this stuff coming up. I want to see what this stuff is. And so I'm going to commit to this thing and then be able to be with these sensations and this tension and find out what it is.
Yeah, that is that's a great suggestion.
Good. You're going to do that.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Now keep your eyes peeled, right? Because just making that statement is going to set that stuff off, right? Because you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be on the horns of this dilemma and miserable for as long as humanly possible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's exactly right.
Uh-huh. Oh, that ego, huh?
It's really out of control right now, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was. But now, you see, what's happened in this is that you've moved from a victim position to the in-charge position, right? So it's no longer just dangling this stuff in front of you, and you go, oh, no. You say, okay, yeah, all right, that's great. So now you've moved into a position of conscious awareness, and it's lost all the power. So it'll be interesting to see how it tries to get it back.
I know it will, but I'll be there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and you'll let me know, won't you?
Yes.
Good, very good. All right, thank you, Ryan.
That was. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Okay. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ryan. And I think we have time for another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Janice calling.
Well, hello, Janice. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. What's going on?
What I sometimes do is just put myself live just in case I might get a call and be unmuted, and I just noticed that almost every week I'm just loving the unknown of all of that.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's good practice for life, isn't it? The great unknown.
Yeah, and that's what I call it. Getting in the queue is called live for life.
Uh-huh. Very good.
So we might not have much time about this, but I was getting a lot out of all the calls tonight, and because one of my things that I'm working for and have just will be getting a coach for is about clutter, and I was looking at, like, am I willing to, what am I doing that holds this all in place? I'm teasing it apart through my stop, drop, and text, or looking at reflective listening buddies and every way that I can do it. But then I had that question, like, am I actually willing, and what am I doing to hold it all in place?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because karma loves drama, right? I don't know, maybe karma and drama are synonyms. Because, of course, the karma, the drama of karma, makes I the center of the universe. And that's all that's really going on. Yeah, for any of us, whatever the karma is, that's all that's going on. This is what I can focus on to be sure that I'm the most important thing in the universe.
Yeah, so that's the content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it zaps the energy, and I notice that there's a lot of, the intentions I set, sometimes the plan to do stuff, to attack the clutter type of thing, are all ego plans. And so I'm looking at a much more compassionate way to investigate, and I'm seeing there's a lot of processes involved. In fact, there's other processes that I've explored about. It's about time, being on time, being early or being late. And those things are even involved in, you know, too tired, mm-hmm. too late.
mm-hmm. And, you know, when we were talking earlier about, you know, just getting out of the whole story, you know, there's so many ways to deal with clutter, right? Mm-hmm. There are just so many ways. What my favorite is, call whatever is the equivalent. Do you have Goodwill or something like that where you live? You know,
yeah.
And you call the truck and have them back it up to the door. and then the big burly dudes come in and just empty the place, right? And, boy, that's a quick trip into no clutter. You know, you could have somebody come over, and your commitment is, I'm going to get rid of 20 things a day. So you pay somebody to come over for an hour and count the 20 things and haul them off.
Right.
Yeah? So there are all kinds of ways to do it. But what karma wants to do is come up with my way of doing it, because my way of doing it is pretty sure to make sure it never happened.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm hoping every one of us in this conversation tonight can see ourselves in that, you know, exactly how we're doing that process. Because that's how karma keeps its little hooks into us.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because anybody, you know, we talk about that a lot, right? Anybody could solve our problems. My favorite is, you know, you just walk down the street and you see somebody who doesn't look terribly busy, and you say, you know, excuse me, I'm hoping you can help me with something. It'll only take a minute. And you just, you know, you do the elevator speech. You've laid your problem out in 50 words or fewer. And you say, what should I do? They're going to have an answer. They'll tell you. And it'll be a perfectly legitimate answer. And then we go, oh, I can't do that.
Right, right. And drop.
If we did, the freedom.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. So all those stories just, okay, I'm getting prepared. I'm ready to do it. And there's a part of me that says, and I want it to be fun.
Yes, yes. And it is if we don't put ego in charge of the project, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I even one thing that was fun was to say, it's not the clutter that's making me suffer. It's the process around it. And
yeah.
So then I could look at the stuff and not feel annoyed.
Yeah,
more like it's a spirit of
inquiry. It's your stuff,
right?
It's your stuff, right? It's your stuff.
Well,
right?
Or family stuff. It's not new stuff that's being bought. Stuff that has all those little ancestral stories and things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That nobody wants. So that sense of thing to hold on. I'm ready to let go.
Yeah. And the thing, of course, I like to always keep in mind is 30 seconds after I die, this is all going to be somebody else's problem.
Yeah.
So I might as well turn it over to them now, right, and get ahead of the game.
Okay. I'm turning it over to now.
Okay. Very good. All right. Thank you, Janice.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice, and we've come to the end of another hour of awareness practice.
Aha! Uh-huh. And a fun one. Thank you, Michael.
Yes, it was great. Thank you, Sherry.
Are we together next week? And then I don't know when the retreat starts.
Yes, together next week, December 23rd, and then no show the following week, Tuesday, December 30.
Ah, okay. Wonderful. All right. See you next week then.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.